Hey there, fellow beverage enthusiasts. Welcome back to Liquortainment Inc., where we mix history with spirits and serve it with a twist of fun. Today, we're diving into a topic that'll make you see our founding fathers and past presidents in a whole new light, their drinking habits and favorite cocktails. That's right, we're exploring what the leaders of the free world love to sip on after a hard day of running the country. From George Washington's homemade rye whiskey punch to FDR's notorious martinis, we're about to discover that our commanders-in-chief knew how to command their cocktails, too. So grab your favorite drink, settle in, and let's raise a glass to presidential potables. Welcome to Liquortainment Inc., the podcast for DIY home bar owners who are looking to enhance their entertainment experience. Created from the passion of our DIY garage bars, man caves, and more Facebook group, we bring you fun information, brands, and products that will make your home bar the ultimate hangout spot. This is not your typical He-Man women haters group, but rather a community of those who appreciate the importance of having a place of their own. So grab a beer, take a seat, and get ready to dive into the world of DIY garage bars and man cave bars. We'll discuss barware, glassware, bar brands, food and drink recipes, along with anything else related to the group's subject matter. Get ready for a liquor-taining experience. In future episodes, we'll cover DIY garage bars, man caves, and pub sheds, along with discussions on barware, recipes, and related topics, and maybe future interviews with brand experts. We'll also talk about the evaluation of brand samples without endorsement payment, ensuring honest thoughts and experiences, and maintaining the same transparency on social media without engaging in a pay-for-play scheme. So grab your tools, write down your ideas, stock up on your favorite beverages, and let's dive into the world of DIY garage bars, man caves, and more. Let's do it together. It's going to be one wild and unforgettable ride, and with that, let's get started. Cheers. Let's kick things off with the father of our nation, George Washington, who wasn't just skilled at leading armies and running a country. He was also one of America's most successful whiskey producers. Back in 1797, Washington established a whiskey distillery at Mount Vernon that became one of the largest in America, cranking out 11,000 gallons of rye whiskey in 1799 alone. Talk about presidential spirits. Now, our first president wasn't just about business. He genuinely enjoyed his liquor, particularly rye whiskey. And let me tell you, colonial-era drinking culture was no joke. The average American in Washington's time consumed about 7 gallons of pure alcohol annually. That's roughly 3 times what we drink today. But remember, water wasn't always safe to drink back then, so alcohol was often the safer choice. Washington's personal favorite was a particular punch recipe that'll knock your colonial socks off. One of the most famous drinks of his time was Fish House Punch, a boozy mix popular among the American elite. Here's how to make it. Mix up 4 ounces of rye whiskey, 2 ounces of Jamaican rum, 1 ounce of cognac, 1 ounce peach brandy, and rumor has it that some cooled black tea was also in there, about 3 ounces. Add in some fresh lemon juice, orange juice, and a touch of brown sugar simple syrup. Top it off with 3 ounces of hard cider, and you've got yourself a drink worthy of Mount Vernon. If you want to do it right, substitute the measurement of ounces. Instead, use cups. The really fascinating part is that Washington insisted on using his own rye whiskey in this punch, which was made from 60% rye, 35% corn, and 5% malted barley. The distillery still operates today at Mount Vernon, producing limited runs of whiskey using Washington's original recipe and 18th century methods. And let me tell you, if you ever get your hands on a bottle, you're holding a piece of presidential drinking history. Washington was also known for his hospitality, often serving drinks to visitors at Mount Vernon. He believed that offering guests a good drink was not just polite, it was essential to building relationships and conducting business. I guess you could say he was mixing diplomacy with mixology way before it was cool. Now, if Washington was our first presidential drinks entrepreneur, Thomas Jefferson was absolutely our first presidential wine snob, and I mean that in the best possible way. During his time as minister to France, Jefferson developed an incredibly sophisticated palate and a deep love for European wines that would influence American drinking culture for generations. Jefferson was literally obsessed with French wines, particularly those from Bordeaux and Burgundy. He spent so much time visiting vineyards and taking notes that you'd think he was planning to write the world's first wine blog. During his presidency, he spent about $16,500 on wine. That's roughly $320,000 in today's money. Talk about having expensive taste in your public service years. But Jefferson wasn't just importing wines. He was trying to make America a wine-producing powerhouse. He partnered with Italian viticulturist Philip Mazzei to establish vineyards at Monticello, his Virginia estate. Spoiler alert, It didn't work out great. Between the local pests and diseases, their dreams of American wine production were pretty much crushed, pun totally intended. Now, while Jefferson was primarily a wine purist, he did enjoy the occasional wine-based cocktail. His favorite was something called cooling sangaree, which is basically colonial-era sangria. Here's how to make it. Take a bottle of good claret, that's what they called Bordeaux back then. Add a quarter cup of brandy, some orange and lemon slices, a stick of cinnamon, and a little nutmeg. Let it sit for an hour, strain, and serve over ice with a splash of sparkling water. Jefferson was also known for a simpler wine cocktail he called the American, which was his version of a wine spritzer. Mix 3 parts of your favorite dry white wine with 1 part sparkling water, add a splash of honey syrup, and garnish with a lemon twist. It's refreshing, sophisticated, and perfectly showcases Jefferson's preference for lighter, more elegant drinks. One of the coolest things about Jefferson's wine obsession was his meticulous record keeping. He documented everything about his wine purchases and tastings in his journals. These records are so detailed that modern sommeliers still use them to track the evolution of certain wine estates. The man was basically running a one-person Vivino app 2 centuries before smartphones existed. When it comes to presidential drinking stories, FDR is the heavyweight champion, and I mean that literally and figuratively. Not only did he help Americans get their legal drink on by ending prohibition, but he also brought style and sophistication back to presidential cocktail hours. I'd say he earned himself a drink or two for that accomplishment alone. Roosevelt campaigned on repealing prohibition, and boy did he deliver. One of his first acts as president was signing the Cullen-Harrison Act, which legalized beer and wine up to 3.2% alcohol. When he signed it, he famously quipped, "I think this would be a good time for a beer." The man knew how to read a room. FDR was famous for his daily cocktail hour, which he called Children's Hour, though, trust me, there was nothing childish about it. Every day at 5 p.m. sharp, he'd gather his closest advisors for martinis and political strategizing. Some of the most important decisions of the New Deal were probably made over his signature extra dry martinis. Speaking of those martinis, let me share FDR's recipe, because this is a game changer. He liked his martinis dirty, strong, and with a theatrical flair. Start with 2 ounces of gin. He preferred Plymouth. Add just a whisper of dry vermouth. And I mean literally, just wave the bottle over the mixing glass. Add a teaspoon of olive brine, stir with ice until frost forms on the outside of the mixing glass, and strain into a chilled cocktail glass. Garnish with 2 olives. The key here was in the preparation. FDR insisted on watching the mixing process, claiming he could tell if the proportions were off just by looking. The Roosevelt administration brought back the concept of sophisticated government entertaining. During his terms, the White House cocktail hour became an institution. These weren't just social events. They were where the real political magic happened. FDR would often soften up his political opponents with a few well-mixed drinks before discussing legislation. He called it his cocktail diplomacy, and it worked surprisingly well. One of his other favorite drinks was the Navy Grog, a nod to his time as Assistant Secretary of the Navy. Mix 2 ounces of dark rum, 1 ounce of white rum, 1/2 ounce of fresh lime juice, 1/2 ounce of grapefruit juice, 1/2 ounce of honey syrup, and a splash of soda water. Serve over crushed ice and garnish with a lime wheel. It's complex, strong, and diplomatic, just like FDR himself. Now, Richard Nixon might have cultivated an everyman image, but when it came to his drinking habits, Tricky Dick was anything but common. Despite his attempts to connect with the average Joe, Nixon was actually quite the wine snob, with a particular fondness for high-end French wines, especially Chateau Margaux. What's hilarious is that while he'd serve his guests the fancy stuff, he'd often have his staff secretly serve him a less expensive wine in a wrapped bottle. Talk about a power move. He'd sit there, pontificating about the exceptional vintage his guests were enjoying, while sipping on something completely different. Classic Nixon, am I right? His peculiar drinking habits didn't stop there. Nixon was known to be a lightweight who couldn't handle his alcohol very well. During his presidency, Henry Kissinger would often tell staff to ignore any orders Nixon gave after his second drink. I guess you could say nuclear codes and cocktails don't mix well. When Nixon did drink cocktails, he had a surprising go-to, the dry martini. But unlike FDR's theatrical production, Nixon's version was surprisingly straightforward. Here's his recipe. 3 ounces of gin, 1/4 ounce of dry vermouth, stirred well with ice, and served with a single olive. No fancy preparations, no special instructions, just a classic simple martini. But perhaps Nixon's most infamous drink was something he created himself, which staffers dubbed Nixon's Manhattan. Now brace yourself for this recipe because it's interesting. Take a glass of dry red wine, he preferred Bordeaux, and add a handful of ice cubes. Yes, you heard that right, ice in red wine. To make it even more questionable, he'd sometimes top it off with 7-Up. I know. Wine enthusiasts everywhere are probably crying right now, but hey, you can't judge a president by his cocktail preferences. Or can you? What's particularly fascinating is that while Nixon would often host elaborate state dinners with premium wines flowing freely, he was actually quite careful about his own consumption. He knew his limits and was terrified of saying or doing something inappropriate while under the influence. I guess you could say he was paranoid about more than just political opponents. Let's mosey on down to Texas and talk about a president who truly embodied the everything's bigger motto, Lyndon B. Johnson. LBJ was as Texas as they come, and his drinking habits were no exception. His beverage of choice? Cutty Sark scotch and soda. And boy, did he love it. He'd carry it around in a plastic cup that his staff nicknamed Johnson's Texas Tea. At his beloved LBJ Ranch, also known as the Texas White House, Johnson would host legendary parties where the scotch flowed as freely as the Pedernales River. He had this amazing tradition called the car bar. Basically, he'd load up guests in his Lincoln Continental convertible, drive them around the ranch, and have his staff chase behind them in another car ready to refill everyone's drink at a moment's notice. Talk about Southern hospitality. Here's how to make LBJ's favorite drink. And trust me, it's simpler than passing a civil rights bill. Pour 3 fingers of Cutty Sark scotch into a tall glass. And when I say fingers, I mean LBJ-sized fingers, which were notably bigger than average. Add ice, top it with soda water, and give it a quick stir. That's it. No fancy garnishes, no complicated mixology, just a straightforward drink for a straightforward man. One of my favorite LBJ drinking stories involves a reporter who was riding shotgun during one of these famous ranch tours. The president was driving with one hand, gesturing with another, all while holding his scotch and soda. When the reporter looked nervous, Johnson tried to reassure him by saying, "Nick, don't worry, son. The only thing I spill is foreign policy." The man sure knew how to work a crowd. Johnson also had this habit of using his empty glass as a signal to his staff. He'd shake it, and the ice would rattle. That was the universal sign for refill time. His staff got so good at it that they'd sometimes have a fresh drink ready before he'd even finished the one in his hand. Now that's what I call executive efficiency. But perhaps the most telling thing about LBJ's drinking style was how he used it as a political tool. He'd often invite senators to informal drinking sessions where he'd work his famous Johnson treatment, using his imposing physical presence and that scotch-fueled Texas charm to persuade them to support his legislation. Between the drinks, the ranch atmosphere, and Johnson's larger-than-life personality, it was pretty hard to say no to the man. Moving into more recent history, our presidential drinking habits have become a bit more, shall we say, camera-friendly. Take Jimmy Carter, for example. He was essentially the designated driver of presidents, known for his sobriety and serving only wine at state functions. It was quite the departure from the 3-martini traditions of earlier administrations. Speaking of departures, Ronald Reagan brought California wine culture to the White House, though he was more of a moderate drinker himself. His preferred cocktail was actually pretty simple: orange juice and vodka, served tall. His wife Nancy was known to keep him on a short leash when it came to drinking, but they did maintain the tradition of the daily cocktail hour. George H.W. Bush was partial to the ultra-American combination of beer and baseball, while Bill Clinton, despite his reputation as everyone's favorite party buddy, was actually allergic to alcohol. Though that didn't stop the White House from serving some fantastic cocktails during his administration, including their signature Arkansas Razorback, a blend of vodka, cranberry juice, and a splash of Southern comfort. Now, George W. Bush famously quit drinking before entering politics, but his White House still served up some Texas-inspired cocktails at state functions. The Crawford Crawler, named after his ranch, became a White House staple. That's 2 ounces of premium tequila, lime juice, and a splash of Texas grapefruit juice. Garnish with a lime wheel, and you've got yourself a presidential sipper. But it was Barack Obama who really brought presidential drinking into the modern age. He established the White House home brewing operation, creating both a honey ale and a honey porter using honey from the White House beehives. If you're feeling presidential, here's a simplified version of the White House honey ale. Combine a light malt extract, honey, gypsum, Irish moss, and East Kent Golding's hops. Though fair warning, you might need a security clearance to get the exact recipe. Obama also enjoyed a good martini, and the White House developed what became known as the 44th Presidency. 2 ounces of small batch American gin, 1/4 ounce of dry vermouth, and 2 drops of orange bitters. Stirred, not shaken. We're not talking about British secret agents here. These days, the White House continues to showcase American spirits and creativity in mixology, though with a bit more restraint than the glory days of LBJ's car bar. It's fascinating to see how presidential drinking habits have evolved from the early days of Washington's whiskey to today's craft cocktails and microbrews. Really reflects how American drinking culture has changed over the centuries. Well, folks, that wraps up our spirited journey through presidential drinking history. From George Washington's Mount Vernon rye to modern White House microbrews, it's clear that our commanders-in-chief knew how to keep their spirits up. Pun absolutely intended. Whether you're feeling presidential enough to attempt Washington's complex punch recipe, or you're looking to keep it simple with an FDR martini, remember to drink responsibly, unlike some of our more enthusiastic presidents. Maybe skip the LBJ car bar concept altogether. That's definitely not advisable in today's world. Until the next episode, raise a glass to U.S. democracy, mix up your favorite presidential cocktail, and remember, I'm your host, making history more entertaining, one drink at a time. From Liquortainment Inc., cheers. Thank you for tuning in to Liquortainment Inc., the podcast where DIY home bar owners and backyard cooking warriors can enhance their indoor and outdoor bar experience and discover the latest brands and products, all inspired by our thriving DIY garage bars, man caves, and more Facebook group of over 875,000 members. If you love outdoor cooking and enjoy pizzas, the next few months will be filled with episodes you are not going to want to miss. We will be focusing on making pizzas outdoors, be it in the driveway, the patio, or the backyard. It matters little. Join us for future episodes as we dive into the world of home bars, exploring all things home bar related, and in the future, we hope to add enlightening interviews with brand experts. Don't forget to subscribe or follow on any of your favorite podcast directories like Apple, Amazon, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or even YouTube, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Make sure you check out any of the brands we've mentioned in this episode or others. By providing us with samples of their products, they are helping us provide you with valuable content for our Facebook group and this podcast. Also, we'd like to see your DIY home bar on our public Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/garagebars. Until next time, cheers.